Good morning. Welcome to the KRFY Morning Show for Tuesday, November 24th. I'm your host today, Chris Bessler, and I'm flying solo as host because my charming co-host, Susie Prez, who's normally with us, has the day off. But we still have a great morning show for you today. The subject is community development, or as I like to think about, how we build a better Sandpoint. And our two guests today are Cliff Warren. He's the former mobility manager for the five northern counties and one of the main guys that brought Spot Bus to town. Say hi, Cliff.
Good morning, Chris.
Also with us is Stephen Drinkard. He's the former grant writer and project manager for the city of Sandpoint. He's now got a private consulting practice, and he was instrumental in getting the parking lot project that was just completed, the Sandpoint Senior Center, completed. Stephen, say hello.
Good morning, Chris.
Yeah, well, thank you for being here, both Stephen and Cliff. And we're going to talk about community development and how we build a better Sandpoint, specifically talking about the Senior Center parking lot project and Spot Bus as kind of cases in as examples. But we're also going to be mentioning other community development projects that help make Sandpoint a better place. But before we get to the interview, let's check in on the weather. Today, as you know, we have snow out there. We got about an inch of snow. And in the lower elevations, it's turning to rain right now. It's projected high today is 36 degrees, but then it's going to turn cold tonight down to 16 degrees with wind. That's going to put the wind chill factor down low. Wednesday, however, the rain goes away. It's going to be sunny or partly cloudy at least, 27 degree high down to 16 degrees again at night. Thursday, that's Thanksgiving Day, it's going to be 28 degrees is our high. Our cold that night, 12 degrees, so it's going to get pretty chilly out there. And then it's going to turn foggy for the next few days. But we're going to have basically a dry Thanksgiving, maybe a kind of white one. Any comment on that, Stephen or Cliff?
Icy roads. That's all I think about. Icy roads.
As long as I don't have to shovel the driveway a lot.
I will say this. Driving down the hill from Baldy today, it was extremely slippery. I was going less than 20 miles an hour and having trouble maintaining control of my vehicle coming down the hill. So if you're out there driving, be very careful today. Give yourself a lot of margin for stopping or turning. Other things going on outside. Sunrise today was at 7:06 a.m. Sunset will be at 3:58 p.m. tonight. And as we come up on the winter solstice, which is December 23rd, we're losing a little more sunlight every day. In the last week, we lost 17 minutes. The good news is, though, that last week we lost 19 minutes. So it's starting to wane a little bit in terms of the daylight loss each day, and it will continue to do that until we get to the winter solstice. And then ta-da, we have longer days every day until June. So that's the good news. It's a waxing gibbous moon. The full moon is tomorrow, and it's going to moonrise tonight. It's going to be 3:40 p.m., so the moon is looking really gorgeous right now. The lake level is at 2051.38 feet. They've been dropping it every week, a foot or more. But in this past week, it dropped just barely a tenth of a foot from a week ago. And it's about where it's going to be now for the winter pool level. And good news for skiers at Schweitzer, it's snowing right now. They're reporting 21 inches of snow at the top and 13 degrees, rather chilly at the top of Schweitzer. There's about 13 inches mid-mountain and 25 degrees. I haven't heard any word that they're going to try to open on Thanksgiving.
I think I read in the paper this morning that they're opening on Friday.
They are opening on Friday. Okay, great. Well, they've been making snow, so they're going to have probably midway in the lower runs open, and the people that got the Joneses for skiing can get up there and start getting some of the good stuff. And before we get into our interview, distinguished guests, what's been going on around town? Come on, I primed you with a big event yesterday.
Earthquake, yes.
Of course, a lot of us missed it. I didn't even feel it. I was in town, but it was early afternoon. I'm sorry I don't have the exact time, but a 3.4 earthquake shook us up a little bit. And some folks say they really felt a lot of shaking, you know, a decent amount of shaking. Seemed like, especially the people in Sagal, it was centered right under Lake Pendere, out kind of a little south of Hope, I'd say. But there are folks that saying they heard a very loud rumble that was associated with it. So It's kind of unusual to get earthquakes, but we've had a few now.
And speaking of rumbles, you know, of course, we've all heard, according to Darrell Wheeler and Heather Scott, is the Syrians are coming. Mm-hmm. And they're going to attack us in our homes.
Oh, Steve, I don't think that they're not going to attack us in our homes.
Yes, they are.
They have concerns about refugees and the possibility that terrorists might come in with them.
Yes, well, that's big news.
Well, our representative Heather Scott yesterday called for a special session of the Idaho legislature to deal with the refugee crisis. And a lot of folks, of course, think that is way overkill. And that there isn't actually a refugee crisis going on. And it's interesting, this was reported in the Spokesman Review, and they gave the list of vetting procedures that refugees have to go through, and it's a year and a half to 2 year process. As far as the state dealing with it, it's mirroring a lot of concerns going on around the country, I think you'd say.
Well, I mentioned that only because I think it's a faux F-A-U-X story.
Okay. Well, that's your opinion, Stephen.
Yes, it is.
Yes, and of course, your opinions are your own.
Yes.
They don't represent...
We represent KRFY.
KRFY. Okay. And, of course, we're all entitled to our opinions. So there you go. There's stuff that happened around town. Unfortunately, the Sandpoint High Bulldogs came up a little short in their state playoff game with Bishop Kelly on Saturday. They lost 21-34. And things coming up this week. Thursday's Thanksgiving. The annual tree lighting ceremony at the Jeff Jones Town Square is on Friday. That's always pretty cool. And it's getting tons more people each year, it seems like. I think at least a couple hundred people showed up last year. And hopefully people will come again this year. The tree lighting really kicks off the season. The Thanksgiving Fishing Derby is going on. They actually took a little break. They started it last weekend. They took a little break for a couple of days for the holiday, but then they pick it up again after Thanksgiving and fish through the weekend. That's a big deal. They're catching some huge fish in the lake now. It's really quite a good story for our town, how the lake fishery has rebounded, and the big Girard strain rainbow trout are reaching monster size again, over 20 pounds. I think somebody caught a 27-pound Girard rainbow out of the lake last week. That's happening. And then one of my favorite groups is going to be in town on Saturday. The Shook Twins are playing at the Panda at 7:30 p.m. They have a couple others playing with them. That would be a great concert to catch because the Shook Twins are doing great music these days. And in fact, when we get to our musical break, we're going to listen to a Shook Twins song, maybe two. But let's get on to the interview of the day here with our guests. Again, we have Cliff Warren with us. He's with, I think we'll make it shorter to say he's with the Spot Bus project. And Stephen Drinker, grant writer. He's been working on the parking lot, brand new parking lot at the Sandpoint Senior Center. And we're going to talk about other projects as well. We're talking about community development, but we're going to talk about these two projects as kind of examples of how community development comes about. So, Stephen, let's start with you. Where did the project for the Senior Center parking lot come from?
I want to come at some point here, though, to what community development is in theory and in practice.
Let's start that.
Okay.
There you go.
My wife cautioned me not to be a nerd here on radio, and so I'm going too late.
Yeah. So
anyway, community development in its broadest sense is a political and sociological perspective on how communities work. A community is any association of people who share common interests. In the broad stroke of the world there and the federal government, community development focuses on the development of low-income people, trying to raise low-income people up to higher on the economic level. In the state of Idaho, we do have the Idaho Department of Commerce, and through its block grant program and through its GEM community planning program and for its shared visitation program, there are attempts by the state to help communities develop. And by develop, I mean that development includes maturation, includes growth, it includes initiation of projects and ideas. development, that's what it means, that there is growth. And we all know there are communities that are in our area that haven't grown very much.
Could you say that, I mean, to give it a more generic definition, could you say it's just projects that improve the community? That's community development. I see the senior center making an improvement to their parking lot as something that makes the community better. Spot bus certainly makes the community better. And then you can look at the plethora of other things like what Panhandle Alliance for Education does to make the community better, what the Panda Theater does to make the community better.
You can use the word, and I probably would use the word better too, but to try to keep it pretty generic is that there's growth and maturation and increasing complexity. That's what development means, because not everybody likes, not everybody thinks it's better. For example, in the 70s, when there was an influx of alternative people to this area, a lot of people didn't like that, but that was part, that influx of people in the 70s, and then in the 90s and 2000s with professional people, and now with, let's say, a cohort of younger people, the dynamics of the community are changing, I think, for the better. But not everybody would agree.
Well, but you're kind of equating an influx of people with a question. A lot of people coming in, does it degrade our quality of life? But I take a look at some of the projects that have happened since I've been around. Like when they built Traverse Park, that was a big deal. There were some people that said they shouldn't be spending money out of Traverse Park. But I kind of doubt any of those people would now say that, Traverse Park was bad, because Traverse Park is such an asset for the community. Another example I would throw out there is probably more germane right now is the Pendre Bay Trail. It is something that was kind of fiercely contested by some people. But I would predict that in 20 years, people are going to look back and say, you know what, the Pendre Bay Trail was a good community project.
Right. Yeah. And what those two instances you bring up illustrate my main point about what I talked to you about, Chris, was what community development is, at least in Sandpoint. It's a creation by dedicated individuals who come together and see possibilities or needs, and then through bulldog determination and insight, they gather the resources, including funding resources, and make something happen. And to it, that was two examples, and we can talk, but there are many other examples here of that.
That's a good definition, broad definition of what community development is.
In our area. Yes.
So let's talk about some of these specific projects. So where did the senior center parking lot come from?
That came about because I was asked, because people know my background in grant writing, I was asked to by the board at the time, the senior board, Sanderson board, to come in and write some grants. And what immediately struck me is that the senior center needed an extreme makeover, starting with the outside, and that it, particularly the parking lot was unsafe. One of the key things, so I saw an opportunity, and I saw an opportunity to make some money for myself, and it was also seeing an opportunity for the seniors to change how they look and how they present themselves to the world, and to make a safer parking lot. I approached the first board, and the idea didn't really take. When there was a new board and a new executive director, Ellen Wiseman, it sort of created the groundwork for me to plant the seed, the idea of going for a grant, because I told everybody this is going to be a lot of work, and it has been. So what it really interests me, just as a person and doing projects in this town, is how you get an idea and then you search for people to help you accomplish that idea. It's really a group effort. I'll give you one example within the many facets of this parking lot. And that was what many people have heard about, the effort to save the ponderosa tree. That's a 200-year-old tree that was in the middle, is in the middle of the parking lot, as it were. And we originally, the designer originally called for it being cut down and moved out. There was some protest about that. So, faced with that,
I found a man named Bill Friedman, who's co-owner of Zero Point, and he is an expert in arboricultural matters, and is particularly in parking lots. Long story short, Bill and I, and consulting with another man, Bill Love, determined that the tree could be saved. Then, with people like Gail Lister, beloved tile artist in town, she and another group of artists started painting the tree and started getting publicity about the tree because we had to raise additional money. There was not any money.
You should say painting pictures of the tree.
Yes. No graffiti. Painting pictures of the tree in order to raise public consciousness. And to that end, Ben Olson and Jim McNiernan of the V stepped up.
Ben Olson, the reader, yeah. Jim McKiernan of the Daily Bee.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, both of those fellows stepped up really well and presented us a lot of publicity, got us about $7,000 in donations, which as the grant administrator for this project, we are down to the last dime and using every dime of those donations there. So that, in short, is an example here of how you start with an idea, and then you find people that join you in that idea, and then you find ways to have funding. It all depends on timing. As I say, the first board didn't care or didn't grasp the importance of doing it. Second board and the executive director did. So timing and funding are everything.
Okay, so Cliff, I want to ask you the same question. You were involved in the startup of the Spot Bus here. How did that come about?
The roots of the Spot Bus started back in early 2000s with the Chamber of Commerce, actually, and Judy Baird put together a group of concerned citizens in the community to discuss possibility of public transportation. They were approached by, excuse me, Chris, they were approached by ITD with the opportunity to have them fund a transportation study, which they took advantage of. And the study was done and completed, I think in about 2005, that study was done. And that study showed that the community could support a transportation system, and it was projecting that they would be able to offer and deliver about 250 rides a week is what the projections were from that study. Several years later, the city of Dover got some stimulus money to buy a small bus and do some renovations on the building as a little transportation shelter.
Roughly what year was that, do you think?
Oh, that was about 2000, I'm guessing 9?
2009, 2010, something like that.
Somewhere in there, yeah. Don't remember, they should have brought a written history. They immediately ran into some problems with the fact that they could get the bus with this, but there was no money available to operate the bus, even to buy fuel. And the other part of the money they couldn't use to rehab the shelter or the little transportation center couldn't be done because it wasn't owned by the city. The city was leasing the building. So they ran into some problems, at which point I got involved with them, and we said, let's see what we can do. So
now, you were involved with them through your position?
Through my position.
Yes.
I had just started. I had been in the job like 2 days.
And this was mobility manager for the five Northern Idaho counties.
Rural mobility manager for the five Northern counties.
And who did you actually work for?
I worked for the Community Transportation of Idaho, and it was based out of Boise.
Is that a nonprofit group?
It's a nonprofit group.
Okay.
Yeah. And it was, and the mobility manager positions was funded through ITD, which, by the way, this is now no longer in existence. The organization exists, but the funding was changed, and the mobility manager position is gone.
I see. Okay.
It's gone now. So I got involved, and we were able to convert the money that was dedicated for the building into operating funds. And so there we go. Now we got a bus, and now we got some operating funds. And Randy Curless, the current mayor, the then mayor of Dover, said wanted to get going. And we got talking about it and said, well, what happens when this money's gone? And we said, well, the bus will be done and the system will go away. So at that point, the idea was hatched to bring in more people, to bring in the other communities. And maybe we could build something that was sustainable. So we We talked to the late Mayor Gretchen Heller and Carol Koonsman from Ponderay.
Excuse me. Mayor Ponderay, yes.
Yeah, Mayor Ponderay. And Randy said, oh, don't forget Kootenai. So we got Maggie Meldy, the mayor of Kootenai at the time. And from there, we started writing grants, and we started trying to develop a system. And, of course, as Stephen mentioned earlier, money was an issue. Money's always an issue in a project.
Mm-hmm.
We realized that perhaps a bed tax for Andre would be a solution to getting some money. Carol Koonsman was all in favor of that. And so we got it on the ballot. And so this process to get the system going took a long time. And we're looking at years to really get the system rolling, but to get the first rides delivered. And at that point, of course, when you do bed tax things, the city that's proposing it can't campaign for it. It's illegal to do that. So I went to, we made a call to the Circles Group. Are you familiar with
yes.
group? Yeah, mm-hmm. The Circles Group, which deals with helping getting people out of poverty, and explained what we're trying to do, and they were all for it. They got on board with us and said, what can we do to help? Because they realized the value of having a transportation, a bus system in our community. And we said, we need somebody to be our champion and go out to, and I'm using the word champion, and I, Stephen and I had a conversation about the word champion. Mm-hmm. So
I like the word.
He likes the word. So they were our champion. They went door to door in Ponderay and campaigned for the system, and it passed by a huge margin.
This was the bed tax.
The bed tax, the right. Ponderay bed tax. Right. And at that point, for the first year of operation, Ponderay put a huge amount of money, like $140,000 towards the project. Meanwhile, we've been writing grants.
Which is a big chunk of the Ponderay budget.
Big yes. chunk. Well, it was new money, mm-hmm. which was an advantage for them because they weren't used to spending it. It was a little more difficult for Sandpoint to come up with some money because they'd already have their budgets established in the way they were doing things, but they still managed to find $30,000 the first mm-hmm. year. And ever since then, we've been bringing the two closer and closer together where it's almost equal now. Each city's putting in the same amount of match money.
And Dover's contribution now is?
Dover's contribution is they are the grantee.
Technically, they're actually running the...
Technically, they run the system. Yes. They are, mm-hmm. They're all employees of Dover. Dover has also put in some other additional in-kind contributions towards wages and things like mm-hmm. that has happened. But we got her going, and I think we've been in business delivering rides for 4 years now. I think the first ride was delivered in about 2011. That first week, we did 250 rides, just like the study said we could do.
Mm-hmm.
The second week, we did 500 rides, and we haven't gone back since then. Right now, we're averaging around 1,800 rides a week.
1,800 rides a week.
A week.
Yeah.
We replaced the old NICE bus system. A lot of people may remember the NICE bus system. That system was, which they went out of business, that system was delivering 3,000 rides a year.
Wow. Total. What's the difference between the huge use spot bus is now getting and what NICE was doing?
Well, one of the differences is the type of system. The spot system is a fixed route. And so you can rely on that bus doing that route and coming to that stop. And we set it on an hour cycle. So every hour that bus is going to be at that stop. The other one was a demand response. You have to call for it. It wasn't publicized well. And I don't think it had a good the lack of publicity. It seemed like it was more for medical aid than anything, and people didn't understand how to use the system, so that hurt there.
I want to get on to the broader topic of community development, but Spot Bus is a pretty particularly interesting community development project. We did have a question emailed into us from a reader this week, I mean a listener this week, and I'm going to throw it out to you. And the question is, in the B last week, there was a person who wrote about housebound seniors and disabled people not having any transportation options. They'd like you to speak about your home pickup for qualifying seniors, if that's part of the program.
That is part of the program. It's a good part of the program. When you have fixed route system, you're required to have what's called paratransit service available, which is a pickup at the door. And if somebody lives within 3/4 of a mile of the fixed route and physically can't get to the bus stop and is going to a place that is within 3/4 of a mile of the fixed route, then Spot offers a service that people have to be pre-qualified for, but they will come to your door and pick you up at that door and deliver you to where you want to go for any reason. It doesn't have to be a medical reason. It could be if you want to go get your hair cut or be taken to the grocery store. And then they'll pick you up there and take you back home again. And that's called paratransit service. And call Spot. And it's open to anybody that is qualified. And you have to get an application form and take the application form and get it filled out to see if you meet the criteria. And you have to, it has to be done with your doctor to show the need. And anybody in the community that lives within 3/4 of a mile of a fixed route can
take themselves. So, listeners, pass that word around if you know people that can use this service.
Which the interesting thing about that service is that it's pretty much identical to the old NICE service that was delivering 3,000 rides a year. And this paratransit service is pushing 6,000 rides a year right now. So just that little segment of that service to assist the disabled and is doing twice what the old NICE bus system
is doing. Right. Well, that speaks probably to more population, more need, certainly, probably, as well as the way the Spot bus is configured with these standard routes that people can actually depend on. And I've never ridden the Spot bus myself. I'm guilty.
Oh, shame on you.
I keep telling myself, I want to get out and just take the circuit here. And it is actually also used by Schweitzer, right? It connects to Schweitzer?
It connects to Schweitzer in the winter.
Yes.
And we are on the verge of, as soon as we find some additional funding for capital, partnering, and again, community development, creating a partnership with Schweitzer and bringing them into the group. And they're going to be putting a lot of money into the system, but we're going to take, it looks like we're on the verge of taking over the Schweitzer service, the Schweitzer system.
Up from the bottom of the hill, up to the top.
Not this winter,
right.
But we're targeted for next winter. And okay. we're looking at new buses, brand new buses.
Wow.
To replace the ones that are in service now. Yeah. And it will be a continuation of our blue route, which goes through Sandpoint. And just continues
right on up to the
up. It'll still stop at the Red Barn. You won't have to change buses. At this point, that's the plan.
Yeah.
Things change, but that's the plan. And just go right up on an hourly basis. You'll go right up to the village.
That's great. Actually, that is a bus I do ride, the bus up to Schweitzer. That's a great asset to be able to park at the bottom, not worry about driving up and down the hill. And the fact that it connects to the Spot bus route right now means that people, especially with kids can grab a bus in town and get up to the top of the mountain.
It's great for kids. They don't have to have their parents drive them over there. They can just get on the bus.
I want to remind our listeners that this is the 88.5 KRFY Morning Show. I'm Chris Bessler, your host today, and we have in the studio with us Stephen Drinkard, a grant writer, project manager, and Cliff Warren. He's a former mobility manager for the Northern Counties. They both have been working on community development projects. And I do also want to throw out a mention that the KRFY annual membership meeting is coming up this next Monday, November 30th. It's at 5:15 p.m. at the East Bonner County Library Meeting Room. And this is all KRFY listeners, supporters, community members, everybody's invited to come to this meeting, hear how the radio station is doing, and put in your 2 cents about what you'd like to see the radio station doing differently. We're speaking today about community development projects, and I have to say, KRFY itself is a perfect example of a community development project that was initiated with a small group of people that had an idea that we want a community radio station, a commercial-free, non-commercial community radio station in Sandpoint that could connect the community together in ways that other media can't, and it was not easy. I wonder, Stephen, maybe you can address that question. Is it ever easy to get these kind of projects going, these kind of community development projects?
No, it never is easy. Cliff and I talked about this. There are any number of stone walls and twists and turns, and areas in which you just end up a lot of times just scratching your head and knowing where to go. And I could cite the number of instances in all the projects I've been involved in, and even the Sandpoint Senior Center project here. I wanted to bring it back a little bit up to 30,000 feet here about community development here, is that this instance you just cited, Chris, KRFY, it provides, it's sort of an example of maturation of a community. Cliff Warren talking about SPOT and all the benefits it provides. And the Sandpoint Senior Center, which began in 1975, provides 24,000 meals a year to people who can't get out of their homes or who now have a place to come for a good home-cooked meal. And it provides a great growing service called Daybreak, which is a daycare center for people with Alzheimer's. So in both the case of SPOT and KRFY and the Sandpoint Senior Center, our specific efforts are contributing, I think, to just a more neutral but more descriptive word, the maturation of our community.
As the community kind of coalesces and grows over time, we start to see these neat new things that come along.
Right.
And actually, I was going to say,
I think we have another prime example of the Bonner Community Food Bank here in town, where it is a community effort. I mean, the support of that organization is fantastic. It's a lot of people. The post office, the postal workers help have a drive. I mean, everybody is out doing their support.
And it's meeting a real well-defined need in this town. And in fact, I'll throw this out. I know they're still looking for people to donate turkeys.
They are.
To the food bank right now. So if you have a charitable impulse, go get a turkey for the food bank. They'd really appreciate it. And you'd be helping out some family in town that could really need it. With that, we're going to take a musical break here. I mentioned that the Shook Twins are going to be playing Saturday at the Panda Theater. And I pulled a song out called Potter's Daughter because they are daughters of a potter. If anybody knows Dan Shook, he's the guy that this particular song is dedicated to. So here we are. It's the Shook Twins, Potter's Daughter. This is about 2 minutes and 46 seconds. And that was Shook Twins, Potter's Daughter. And you're listening to the KRFY Morning Show. I'm your host, Chris Bessler. I'm here with Stephen Drinkard and Cliff Warren, and we're talking about community development. I'm shorthanding it as ways to build a better community. We've been talking specifically about Spot Bus. Cliff was involved in that, and the Sandpoint Senior Center. Stephen Drinkard was involved in that. But Stephen, I'll throw it out to you. There's a whole bunch of examples of the way community, not just maybe the whole community, but little micro communities pull together to develop something that makes a whole community better.
Yes. I made a list last night just off the top of my head, and I'd like you guys to chime in. And one of the segues that Cliff mentioned was, of course, the Bonner Food Bank. A perfect example. But I divided it into three areas. And one of the typical areas when people think about community development, they think about the economy. And that is true. If you look at our economy, what differentiates it from a place like Haley, Idaho, a sister city, is what the private development of entrepreneurial efforts. The Hawkins brothers with Lighthouse, Dennis Pence and his wife in Coldwater Creek, John Sneddon and UNICEF, Ann and Kelly Zapp from Thorne, Tom Hamilton, David Voteman, and Bruce Kennedy for Quest, and lately Charles Manning for Kachaba. And there are many others that we could talk on, the Evans brothers. We could go on and on, a list of private entrepreneurs who came here, and they are developing the community by infusing money, basically, in the community. There are people, though, that have made efforts that I call private development of physical icons. Scott Glickenhaus, who was also championed by Mayor Sally Kupan in 1982, built the bridge, which is an iconic feature of our community. The Fenton family bought the old Catholic church and created a beautiful community center. According to Helen Newton, it was Bud Moon and some other fellows who looked at that mountain that we now call Schweitzer and said, hey, I think we can put a ski hill up there. Again, an individual seeing a possibility Jane Evans, Laurel Wager, Susan Harbuck Bates rescued the Panada because they saw a need and a possibility. So there's just in those, and you guys might have some other examples, but I wanted to mention, again, public officials, too, and staff. It doesn't have to be all private individuals. It is also people within our public services, city or county. I want to mention one. I could talk a long time about this, but this is a striking example of how a city can make a significant change in our community. Marion Ebbett and her council people at the time in the middle 80s decided to create the Sandpoint Airport Industrial Park. And they gave the county the full control of the airport, and they said, we're going to build an industrial park. And 15 years later, through grants and various people helping out, that area now supports an annual employee salary of about $12 million. And that, of course, we all know what the effect of that $12 million has on our community. Wayne Gunter and former Mayor David Sawyer really were the two people that were instrumental in building the new library, which is one of our jewels in our community. Kerry Logan and Cody Van Dyke, Kerry Logan, the present mayor, Cody Van Dyke, the present public works director. It was their efforts behind the scenes, and yes, there were a lot of people helping out on the Amtrak to keep Amtrak station here, but it was really Kerry Logan and Cody Van Dyke who took extraordinary steps in developing relationships with Burlington Northern and Amtrak to keep the money here, get the money from ITD and rebuild the station there. There's a long list of projects. I was involved with developing the Urban Forestry Program, the Urban Renewal Agency. And the point is that there are people that even within bureaucracies, such as a city or a county, can step up and go beyond what they normally would do.
Yeah. I think in all these organizations you're talking about, the key thing has been that there's been one person or two people.
One or two people.
That have had the vision.
That's right.
But they've also carried with that vision the ability to bring the rest of the community into the effort.
Right. That's key, Cliff, yeah. Is that it does start with some people that are bulldogs and they'll really go after it. But if they don't coalesce a group of support, the idea is not going to go anywhere.
I'll give you an example.
And you can get the support, but then once you get the support, then you need to be able to press on and get the means to do it. And I think those three things are what help, are what drive community development. Mm-hmm. The vision, the expanded group, and finding the means and the funding to get something done.
I'll give you a couple of examples here. Everybody chime in on this. Is one of the organizations I helped start with, Carol Curtis, a current real estate agent in town, was BETA, Bonner Education and Technology Association. The goal was that we wanted to improve our awareness in the town of technology and improve our educational opportunities, et cetera, as well as bring broadband to the community. We're talking, early 2000s. And we did a pretty good job. Chris was involved. We had some fairs and workshops and so forth that Chris Bessler and Keoki participated in. But really, cutting to the chase, it was really the three or four individuals that were spearheading that. Just we, myself included, basically kind of gave up. We ran out of energy. And this really not, we did some nice things, but we just ran out of energy.
I think that is an important thing in the longevity of any of these groups. You have that core group that gets it started, but there has to be the coalescing of support around it so that it can be the mark of success is when it's able to carry on to the next group.
Exactly.
Of people.
It needs, and from the original group that I mentioned that got spot going, there's now the current mayors are carrying on forward and trying to bring and the support, and the city councils are vital to the success of the system. And they're all still on board and they're all still looking forward. And Spot just did a 5-year strategic plan, mm-hmm. Which for a small transit system is unheard of.
Because they don't know if they're going to be around in five
no,
years.
They know they're going to be.
This group, but a small transit
group. Small transit groups don't, but our group does. Our group does. We've got good plans for the future, but it's all because the momentum is still rolling.
because people are still being involved. The community is still embracing the idea, and there's new people coming on board all the time.
But, you know, this back, you mentioned, I think, the chamber at the time. This was many years ago. The chamber, and I remember those discussions. We needed some kind of transportation, and it went nowhere. And it went partly nowhere, even though the chamber has a pretty high platform. You know, there was no money involved. There were some studies done. I recall those and so forth. It really took Randy Curlis saying, "I'm going to get some money here," and then he got the money for this for the bus, and then he really didn't know really what to do with it. And then it was the fact that you were a paid employee who had vision, who saw an opportunity, you know, and then you gathered enough forces around you, so it is completely sustainable now. But again, it took some effort, some individuals, to move it off dead stop.
But you know, there are folks that are detractors
Of
the spot bus. They say, well, that's giving free rides to people. You know, they question with the use of public money for
Who
that.
Who says that?
There are people. And there's also people that say, well, we look at the bus and we don't see people. Well, a lot of times they're looking at that bus that's providing that very vital service to move the people that are housebound. You know, and they see that bus and they say, oh, there's only one person on the bus. Well, yeah, there is. Yeah.
I want to bring one example here. Transition Sandpoint. You remember that?
I do remember Transition.
And Chris does, I know.
Yeah. They had a mobility
Called the Sandpoint Transition Group.
Sandpoint Transition Group.
The Transition Group is actually a national level program. And Sandpoint, I think it was Richard Cunell. I'm sorry if I messed up his name here, but he started this here. And River was a big deal here for a while, a significant thing. We were the second city.
And not only that, I think there was a story in a major, I think it was the New York Times, wrote a story about Sandpoint as an example of the transition initiative that was kind of flowering in a lot of little communities around at that time.
And there were a lot of good things. And some people came to me, part of that group, and talked to me about writing grants. And I realized then I said you don't need to be actually asking for a grant writer. What you need is to get the city of Sandpoint or city of Ponderay or the county to get to buy in. You need a larger platform. If you don't integrate with the city, you guys are just going to be out there and having meetings, you know, and you had a lot of great meetings and there were a lot of great ideas. But because it never, for whatever reason, integrated with the city or the county, it had no major platform to grow. Because they were talking about a huge transformation of how we are as a community.
Mm-hmm. They'd left some lasting things, though. I mean, those flags that you take to cross the street.
That's right.
Yes.
That's a directly a project of the Sandpoint
Transition.
And how
about the community garden? Was that a transition initiative project?
I don't know if it specifically was, but it's certainly part and parcel of their philosophy.
Of their philosophy, yes.
Yes.
Right.
Yeah, to grow things locally.
Right.
Yes.
And you know, I wouldn't say that the initiative itself doesn't exist as a philosophy that a lot of people here feel strongly about.
No, it does. I mean, that philosophy goes back to E.F. Schumacher. I don't know if you guys remember that book, Small is Beautiful. That was in the middle to late 60s. E.F. Schumacher wrote a book about growing things locally, about making your economy smaller. Don't make it bigger, make it smaller. All that is there's a history of that folds forward through Sandpoint Transitions and into some of the ideas that we see being expressed today.
And one community development project that's still out there, still working away, but hasn't found its footing yet, I think, is the idea of building a recreation center for Sandpoint. I know there's a group that's even still working on it, but it's been years and years. And you mentioned, Cliff, that it takes three things. You know, it takes the visionaries. Well, the visionaries have been there. They're people that really believe, let's get this thing going. It'd be good for our community, good for our youth. It takes that group of support to surrounding those people, and I think there is support for it, but it takes means as well.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
The recreation center would be an expensive thing to build, and they haven't been able to figure out, okay, how are we going to do that?
Right. Yeah, that's an example there of where, you know, of the most important element that's missing is money. And I know they tried to align themselves with the YMCA out of Spokane.
And they still are.
They are.
They're still doing it.
They're aligned.
They're actively a YMCA, I think, aren't they?
I think they are. And I got to throw out to whoever's listening, we're not experts on this particular group, but we do know that the recreation group has been trying for years to get this going, a recreation center. And the vision there would be something with possibly an ice rink in it for kids to play hockey.
My opinion is that, and this is just my opinion, is that it has to, again, yoke itself to the city or the county, city of Sandpoint, city of Ponderay, the two biggest cities here. It has to yoke itself to either of those entities, just like, you know, the Memorial Stadium was being rebuilt through the city effort, really, to pass a tax. Mm-hmm. I think this business of the recreation center is a big enough project that the city has to be involved in it.
Well, possibly. You do have the example in Coeur d'Alene of the Croc Center being built by simply the largesse of the Croc, I guess it's the foundation.
But the city of Coeur d'Alene was actively involved in that. It's so big.
I think this group is on the right track, though. I mean, I have experience with another YMCA in Illinois in a small town of 5,000, that got a YMCA built, but they started small. I mean, they started offering classes in an empty school that they rented part of, and they were giving swimming lessons in somebody's swimming pool, a private swimming pool that was, you know how big, they're not very big at all.
Right.
But yeah. I think it can happen. It can happen for them.
Yeah.
You know, we were talking about here is what, during break, we were talking about what walls are presented for any kind of community development efforts. And here's one example in this recreation center, and it's a legitimate criticism, is that I think the owners of SWAC say, hey, we've provided a service here, a community rec center, as it were, for a long, long time here, and now you're going to ask the city or you're going to ask for tax dollars or whatever to help fund this. This isn't right. So there's a good example of a barrier, and it's a real barrier. It's an honest barrier, but there are many other barriers that happen.
And that's a philosophic question there. Yeah. You know, should the public sector be stepping on the toes of the private sector?
Exactly.
The private sector is providing that
and
service.
And in all community development, there's these philosophical questions that have to be answered, and you have to wrestle with them. And sometimes they're not surmountable, and sometimes, you know, a resolution is reached. It's part of the process.
Mm-hmm. A couple other things. So we only have a few minutes left now, but what are some community developed projects that you'd like to see come to fruition? Can you rattle any off? I thought about this in advance, so I can tell you right now, I really think the city's working towards it very hard, and I think we're close now, get a fiber optic network providing particularly for the downtown. That's so essential for the growth of our employment sector, basically.
Yes. I think that's true. I think it needs to be more than just the downtown. I think it needs to be a surrounding area to attract business, because business needs high-speed connections.
Broadband is a great example, and there are a lot of us have worked on that for years and years. The other example to me, since I've worked on it a long time, is getting North Hanover College to be not just a satellite, which it is now, but to be a branch campus. Mm-hmm. I think that would provide a quantum leap for this community. If Sandpoint now had a satellite campus here, and the problem is the thing you have to overcome there, you have to get the citizens of Boundary County and Bonner County to agree to tax themselves. If you do that, then all of a sudden now we have money to build residential dorms and so forth. It changes the whole complexity of the city.
It does, but it would infuse a lot of vitality to our business district,
immensely,
and even to the local culture with more young people.
Yes.
Yeah, I think it's concerning. Look around the table here. Everybody here's got pretty gray hair, maybe white hair. Speaking for myself,
or no hair,
or no hair in some cases. Yeah.
And the demographics of our area are skewing to retirees. We're seeing young families not making it here, and bringing in a college campus and making it more of a viable campus would certainly help in that respect as well.
Yes,
but you're right, Stephen, as to the fact that Sandpoint, well, Bonner and Boundary counties would basically need to tax themselves.
Yeah.
We have, even with our satellite campus, been riding on the coattails of Kootenai County somewhat.
Yes. It's not fair right
yeah.
now.
Because Kootenai County does pay a tax yeah. that supports yes. North Idaho College. Yeah. And you know, we're kind of leveraging it to our advantage with our satellite campus up here, but we leverage it to our advantage with our Sandpoint kids that go down to North Idaho College as well.
They start here and they right. go down there.
Yeah.
I think another project that's starting up here is this the continued and the growing effort on trails in our community. And I think that's something that can help the community and be a real economic driver for the community if we continue to build and interconnect the trail systems that we have, that we've started.
Yeah, no question. And that's something that started from the grassroots as well. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And I think some of the agencies have gone on board. And in fact, of course, the city of Sandpoint just approved the construction with some partners, including Schweitzer, and I think the Department of Lands of the Watershed Crest Trail, mm-hmm. which will be an amazing asset for our town. And I know some folks listening say, well, I'm never going to go on that trail, but it serves as an attraction for people to come here. That particular trail is going to be, I believe, what, 25
miles?
Yeah. So, and they're trying to build it to a degree of completion, or I'm not sure what the words are, but trying to build it so that mountain bikers could do it. And a 25-mile mountain bike ride is like a great, ambitious day ride on a mountain bike. And, of course, the trail itself would cover amazing scenery, landscapes, be beautiful.
We're busy waiting for the final say on a grant. Again, it's a cooperation between North Idaho Bikeways and the county and Avista and Northern Lights and ITD to rebuild the Sagal Trail. Because it's deteriorated badly.
It has, yeah.
And people don't want to ride their bikes.
I've ridden down there, and I don't ride it anymore because there's so many.
You are one of many. Yeah, that right. Just won't go down it anymore.
Right, that's right.
And speaking about additional projects here, we're not going to have time to get into this. The question for me is, so if it is the people at Sandpoint and this larger area that create the community development, then how can we as a community nurture that idea and make that a stronger idea? I think it really is a significant part of community development here. It is the individuals. And we don't have time to get into that, but we are an entrepreneurial community here. And what could we do for creating entrepreneurism as a philosophy that starts in our grammar schools and goes through our middle schools and into our high schools and so forth? Anyway, another day, another topic.
Yeah, mm-hmm. It is. That's a big topic into itself. Well, thank you again, Stephen Drinkard, former city grant writer, project manager, now a consultant, and Cliff Warren, former mobility manager for the five northern counties, involved with SPOT, Stephen with the senior center and other projects. Thank you guys both for coming in.
You bet.
And we are running out of time here. I would like to say again that the KRFY annual membership meeting is going to be Monday, November 30th, starting at 5:15 p.m. at the East Bonner County Library Meeting Room. And everyone's invited to that. We hope you come. The KRFY itself is a great example of community development, of a community development project that was driven by a few visionaries to start with,
yes.
coalesced support.
Right.
And it finds its means by the support of our listeners. We always accept donations. You can do that online at carefy.org. You can show your support by coming to the meeting. And of course, we accept underwriters as well. And with that, gentlemen, thank you again for coming in.
Thank you.
And we're going to go out with another song by the Shook Twins. This is one of their more recent ones. It's called A While. Shook Twins, again, are playing this Saturday at the Panda Theater at 7:30 p.m. You should go, especially if you've never heard them, because they're a terrific group. And thank you very much, and have a great Thanksgiving.
I could, baby,